Welcome to the podcast, the Roman Atwood Podcast. I'm sitting here with my beautiful wife, Brittany Atwood. We've got Cletus McFarlane sitting in today. And we've got, I'm just going to say it.
The legend.
We're all super fans, man. We're kind of freaking out
right now.
It's
a big day for us.
We've got Rob Dyrdek in the house on the cast today.
Thank you. Yeah, very humbling. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Cletus.
Really?
Appreciate you, man.
I appreciate
you. Thank you for being here with me.
He really just wanted to hold your hand. Like, look, that's all he wanted to do.
Is it all right if we just hold hands?
No, no, let's.
Oh, take the energy.
Wow. Man.
Wow, I feel optimized.
You better feel optimized.
Welcome to our little show, man. We are Ohio.
Yeah.
Still living in Ohio.
No, I know.
Do you ever miss Ohio?
I don't.
It's impossible to miss Ohio.
Yeah.
Every time we leave, we're like, why do we live here?
Yeah. You know, I think early on, it was like, you know, Ohio is my home.
Yeah.
And I think I went through sort of a phase of like, I'm going to move back. And in that era, I had all my signature skateboards. I had the Ohio flag with the little alien head in the circle. And I was like, I'm going to move back here. And then I came back after like 10 months and I'm like, this, okay.
Hell no.
What is this place? I'm never coming back here again, you know.
It's tough.
To the chagrin of my mother who wishes I visited more.
Yeah. And mom and dad still live there?
Yeah. Mom, dad, sister all live in the same sort of neighborhood so that they can be next to my nephew. And then, of course, we FaceTime them twice a week. And every FaceTime, she tries to convince the kids, my kids, that they should move to Ohio. So they're in the front lines of like, we should move to Ohio. Why don't we move to Ohio?
Yeah.
But they're 5 and 6. They don't know.
We just got to pull the trigger. Every winter, we suffer. We're never spending another winter in Ohio. And then winter hits. And we do it all over again. And we do that every time because dad's there, family's there, brother's there. And we just can't leave them.
Yeah.
But maybe we should just leave them.
I don't know. I think it's tough. You know, I think it's tough because I do think, you know, there's a cultural and a comfortability. And like now your kids, like you want your kids to be raised in that sensibility. And maybe another place, not out here because out here is too crazy. Yeah. But maybe like Texas or somewhere that's like, you know, walks the line a little bit.
Florida,
you know what I mean? Although it's a little dicey down there.
It's a little dicey.
The majority of serial killers come from there.
Darn right.
It's a fist fighting capital of the United States, Tampa, Florida, you know. So
we got alligators.
And you got gators that take out old folks that are just trying to walk their dogs.
That video was so sad.
Well, that's all the cons. I mean, there's some pros.
Yeah.
Well,
the pro is no taxes. You know.
Yeah, we got that.
And I would live there already if my wife would have approved it. You know, if I could have got a cosign of like, let's move to Miami, I probably would have done it.
You like Florida?
I like it in concept.
Especially when you're making money.
Yeah, strictly for to avoid the state tax.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, do you like giving all your money?
It's painful. And it's I got deep into like exploring. I thought it was my destiny to move to Vegas not that long ago. And I got deep into it. But just at the end of the day, I just couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, I got an opportunity for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big money. My wife's slowly like trying to get out of the podcast. She's just trying to get out of it. So you could be sitting here with me.
Yo, man.
In Ohio.
Your parents hit me up. They said you could come back.
Yeah, man. Look, podcasting is hard. You know what I mean? In the sense of like how much time you can dedicate to it. Because even me of shooting a podcast, of sharing my philosophy, I still shoot 4 at a time and only shoot them for 25 minutes by myself so I can just knock them out and be done
with it. Disperse
them. Yeah, it's like it's a time efficiency thing for me. And I have a feeling we're going to be here for like at least 2 hours.
All right. I'll take it.
We got to put a clock on it.
I can't imagine doing it by myself. Like I rely on like you're really good with your words and fast and educated and business savvy and we all have a million questions. We all are really fans. You've inspired our careers. A lot of our YouTube success was inspired through your creativity, your shows, Fantasy Factory, Robin Big. That was literally like me and Country, right? It was like we all grew up. I mean, his company is
yeah. I was gonna say inspiration to a level that may surprise you.
Yeah, no. I wish I was more informed to understand. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I actually bought a abandoned racetrack on my YouTube channel and named it the Freedom Factory directly.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't legally not directly, but no, I mean like Fantasy Factory was the thing that I just blew my mind as a young guy trying to make it. Like that was the most incredible thing ever when Fantasy Factory was out. And when the opportunity presented itself for this racetrack, like the only name that hit was Freedom Factory.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, should hit up Rob Dyrdek. And I was like, brother, I wish.
But I, and what goes on at the Freedom Factory?
Freedom. Now it is, it's like a staple in Florida of the, actually I would go as far as to say like the whole racing community, basically, you know, racetracks all around the country are closing down one by one. We actually bought one and saved it. So now all the fans from our YouTube channel can come there and we do racing, burnout shows, all kinds of
real redneck.
I can show you some pictures.
No, real fun. Real
love
fun.
It. I love it. Yeah, because I mean, ultimately, you created your own Fantasy Factory.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I guess you added pranks or other random
stuff.
Yeah,
our home, yeah, basically our backyard became our Fantasy Factory. It's like, that's where our friends hang out and we do stupid stuff. And, yeah.
And I could see, like, you know, I was still just a skater from Ohio that just, you know, I never. The first stunt I think I ever really even did was when we were shooting Robin Big. We were in his hometown and it was like, do you want to ride a bull? And it was like, what? Like, that's the first time I kind of ventured off into like doing stunts. And then I was like, oh, I should start, you know, evolving this. And then it kind of turned into, you know, some adventurous stuff in Robin Big, but it was really, you know, when I was creating Fantasy Factory, it was like through this lens of, you know, because originally it was like Fantasy Life was the name of the show. Mm. And then I'm like, man, I'm like the Willy Wonka of this. This is like Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. And that's what led to like Fantasy Factory. And man, having the platform then led this entire path to like doing all these stunts and all this crazy stuff I would have never thought I would have, or even considered if I wouldn't have managed my way into creating that show in the first place.
Right on.
It's amazing. It's so cool because it's just like thinking of the foam pit and everything about it was just so mind-blowing to all of us.
It's also cool and so iconic. Like you've actually hit multiple generations. That is an art form. Like you're a lot younger than me. Mm-hmm. You're a lot younger than me.
How old are you, Clea?
27.
Just a child. He's just a child.
Just a kid, man. And he's crushing. He's crushing it.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. We had... And I didn't even realize it at the time. And in our prime of YouTube, we had such a young youth audience, you know, watching us do our crazy stuff, our family life and kids. And now the only people that come up to me now are like, I grew up watching you. And they're adults, they're 18, they're starting college, they're starting their own careers. And that's something I always push my viewers to do, is to get after it and start your own business. And so I, day one, when I started my podcast, I need Rob Dyrdek on the show. Because I love to inspire my viewers.
Yeah.
And I love your inspiration, man. So I would love to dig into like, not only everyone sees your success on the outside, I would love to hear some of the fails. You know, some of the things you thought were great that didn't work out, and really give it to the viewers of like, you have to fail to succeed. You have to have these moments that take you in a different direction. And like, I'd love to just hear you spitballing some of this stuff.
Yeah, and
man.
I mean, look, I sit in the middle on this like pushing failure. You know what I mean? Like, failure is a part of it, but failure is also not binary. It doesn't work or it fails. That's not how anything works. Like, you're continuously growing and evolving and expanding in life. And so you want to do as much as you can to reduce the stakes of failure. You know, I fail all the time on an ongoing basis, but it's, I've built it to where there are no real stakes in anything I'm attempting to do, right? And so for me, I think even early on, you know, you have to take big risks when they don't work, that it's life-changing and really, really problematic and makes you question everything, that you got to get through a couple of those, because if you have a handful of those major ones, that you'll really begin to lose belief in yourself, right? Because I think that's really what it's all about from a long-term perspective. You take risk and it begins to work. Little things fail, but it ends up working out as a whole. You build that self-belief in yourself, and that's really what you're trying to do in the long term as you're creating everything. But look, I tried to... You know, I put $2 million into a movie. I acquired DNA and Alien Workshop, the company from Ohio, and lost, you know, $4 million and broke a lot of hearts. Like, I just continuously had cartoons on Nickelodeon that didn't work out, like, had multiple shows and pilots of shows that have never worked out. I shot a crazy business show for NBC where I'm like, this is going to be where my business voice is like, I'm going to take out Shark Tank, and it didn't get picked up. You know, it's like, it's the entire process of anytime you want to do something, that you got to take a risk. But I don't preach like failure's the way. You know what I mean? Because I tell you what, it's way more fun when it works. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, you get discouraged. It's easy to get discouraged fast. I mean, like, you're talking a list of things that didn't work out.
Yeah,
most people would get, that's it. Like that one fail and it's over.
Yeah, gotta keep moving.
You got to push through it. Because now you're doing pretty good, I heard.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you going to be the first skateboard billionaire?
I don't know. I mean, there's no doubt I'll be a billionaire, but I'm not. I wouldn't put myself as like a skate billionaire. You know what I mean?
No, I Googled Rob Dyrdek billionaire. I thought maybe you were a billionaire.
Yeah. Oh, really? No.
But the headline was, "Will he be the first skateboarder billionaire?"
Yeah. No, it's funny because you got to think about, like, despite my skateboarding lineage, I still like. It's less, even though I created a lot of different businesses and venture inside it, I still feel like you're most known for ridiculousness.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Of course.
And if you got to think about an unusual audience, there's plenty of people that'll say, you know, because you know me for a lot of different reasons, mm-hmm. right? Like if you come from skateboarding, you know me from skateboarding. If you watched MTV in 2008, 2010 zone, like, okay, it's Robin Big and Fantasy Factory. But basically, like, the core of when I walk the streets, it's like 6 to 60. It's like kids and like the Uber driver and, you know, a celebrity. It's like, it is like the random depth of the amount of people that have watched that show that I think is probably where the core of like my identity sort of sits. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you also got 24-hour coverage of the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
60%.
60%?
Yeah.
So,
but you got to think about it. It's not like, it's no, you got to think about it from this perspective. Cable collapsed, right? It wasn't like I just happened to be at the right time, at the right place with the right type of content, right? I created the show concept because I didn't want to have to keep doing stunts and it'd take me 6 months to shoot 10 episodes of Fantasy Factory when it would take me, you know, 2 weeks to shoot 10 episodes of Ridiculousness. And, you know, that, like, that type of, you know, desire to make it more easy to shoot, you know, I looked at it more from an energy and time and a potential business of what the opportunity could be. But I could have never imagined that YouTube would kind of explode, streaming would explode, cable would disintegrate, and then Ridiculousness would be right in the middle. It's like, it's kind of YouTube short form content, but people watch it for like 2 or 3 hours at a time because it's easy to digest. And it's like half streaming is almost like why the success of it, all of these things that I got really lucky on along this way.
I got a funny little story about that. Many, 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 many years ago, we've been grinding on YouTube for 3 years, like with no success, like living it, grinding it, trying everything. After 3 years, I get a video to go viral. Viral to me, it was like 600,000 views in 5 days. It was huge for me. Mm-hmm. Tosh.0 was calling and all these shows were calling that I was like, oh my God, like I've never seen anything like this. Well, I remember at that time, you guys were in season one, I mm-hmm. believe, or even sooner than
that. Did we call for the video?
Yeah, but what happened was Tosh.0,
Tosh
wanted it. And they said, this is his true story. He said, yeah, Ridiculous is never going to make it past season one.
Yeah.
And so when you're saying, like, exactly what you're saying, you just plowed right through.
Yeah.
Awesome. But
how many episodes now?
Yeah, and I mean, look, I think in that era, you know, obviously, you know, he was pretty hurt of like this idea that's inside Viacom that there would be another clip show. You know what I mean?
Competition.
And you know, I think for us, it was always this idea of it's friends watching the video is more the content. You know what I mean? And even back then, they premiered the show on the night of the movie awards. So the ratings on the first one were super outrageous too, you know, which really bummed him out equally, right? And then as the show began to evolve, you know, all of it was never in those first, you know, in the first season, it was so, they forced me to do so much sort of scripted structure. And then in the second season, I'm like, I'm just going to freestyle everything. I'm not doing these throws to commercial. And they slowly allowed me to optimize it to a point where it was more like an improv 30 minutes. And that's when it really began to like find its way. But it wasn't until like I owned the production and then really negotiated on the economics of the show and to get them to buy more at once that then they started to air more, that then it really took off when they began to air more. And then it really changed, you know, to where like if I've done 1,200 episodes by now, you know, somewhere in the 1,200 to 1,300 range. And then I just signed a deal to do 2,000 more, right? So it's like, and then I shoot, you know, I used to shoot 2 a day for a month and it was just draining and just such a nightmare. And I'd be there all day to where now I shoot 8 of them in under 5 hours, right? So it's a much more highly optimized, efficient machine. And then for me, it takes very little energy and time to execute it. And it's sort of brand neutral. A lot of people don't even know if I still film them. You know what I mean?
Really?
They don't even realize I shoot 336 brand new ones every single year. You know what I mean? It's because so it's many. Even that doesn't even make sense to anyone in TV, you know.
I heard you talking about that show and those are huge numbers for us, right? Like we have 2,000 vlogs on YouTube, right? So I understand the amount of uploads that is, but the time difference that it takes us, you're talking like 4% of your time.
Yeah.
To shoot all these shows a year, right?
Yeah.
That's mind-blowing. Like, I don't even understand that.
Yeah. But it's life design, right?
Yeah.
Like, everything's around time and energy for me, you know? And so even when I say it takes me 4% to shoot it, it's not, man, that's everything. That's driving here. That's the prep the night before. That is then shooting it. That is everything. That is every bit of ounce of energy that I put into that show. And I've just optimized like every single aspect of it. It turned it into a machine and just kept making it more and more and more efficient so that I can, you know, and you got to think there's 100 people behind that funnel those script, the final versions of those show up to me. And then I grade that show 0 to 10 on how well I like it when I go through it. And I time how long it takes me to prep for it. So if it takes me over 10 minutes to prep for a show, then it gets a lower number. If it goes beyond 15, it gets a really low number. And then that way I was able to weed out the quality of writers that would deliver the shows to me. Then I change titles, get it ready for shooting. And then I just freestyle the show straight through. And then I realized like, okay, well, you know, how can I shoot more of these in the same amount of time? And I realized, well, if we skip 2 wardrobe changes and shoot 2 episodes back to back in the same wardrobe, that I can shoot 33% more shows a year in the same 42 days, essentially shooting 336 instead of 252. But the beauty of it is then I get 33% more talent fee and I just added 33% more EBITDA to the company that I'm going to turn around and sell for a third time this year, right? So it's like all of this all boils back to how much time do I really want to dedicate to it, right? And so I look at every single thing in my life through that lens, and every hour counts to me, and the value of that hour is incredibly important to me, because at the end of the day, I just want to have like joy consistently in every hour, mm-hmm. because that over extended periods of time is what makes you feel truly happy, right? And for me, like that management of the time becomes so important. So even when I look at something, I would do, when I think about you guys spending hours shooting a vlog video and try even like traveling for a vlog video and then like editing it and going through, it's just like, man, it makes me tired. Even
I feel like I spend 4% of the time in the bathroom.
Yeah. Well, look, yeah. 4% of your life is 1 hour a day. You know what I mean? Okay. So you really, if whatever you do for 1 hour a day, that's the same amount that I shoot ridiculous.
Is this something?
It's more like 10%.
Yeah. Then I'm more around 10%. Chill. Have you always been this efficient mentally, or is this something you've developed through business and learning?
Yeah. Through a series of experiences, right? And I think the biggest one is just when I, you know, in the heyday of what I'd consider my peak sort of MTV Rob, like Fantasy Factory, Ridiculousness, Wild Grinders, Street League, just Finance, Street Dreams, Escape Film, like had DC and Monster and all these, this fully integrated multi-platform universe of brands and media. I was approached by a private equity group to own a piece of everything that I did forever, right? A 360 deal. And when they went in and diligenced me, they ultimately saw that I was just a chaos, that I didn't fully I had all these businesses, but I wasn't really creating value and was super unorganized. And ultimately, instead of making me wealthy and recognizing that I'm meant to be a billionaire and they're going to help, smart people are going to help me do it, they offered to loan me money to own and then have the right to own half of me for life, right? And so what it did is just, it created this self-awareness of like, man, you're just not who you think you are, which was, I think, the most painful. Because it's one thing when you kind of know you're faking it till you make it, but when it seems like you've made it, and I'm still making a ton of money and I've created all these things and found all this success, but the way that I envisioned myself was not accurate, right? I thought I was this amazing business person who really understood what others did, and that I was willing to execute and put in the work to get here. And like, that's why I had created the success that I have created. This is how you do it. You just grind it out. You just give it, push everything. And the truth was, I had all of that and I was unhappy. I was just booming and busting and partying all the time and never had like a stable relationship. And it was this just awakening of like, you can't, I thought my chaos had led me to here, and now someone was going to save me and then turn me into the business person I knew I was meant to become. But instead it turned the mirror on me that essentially said, hey, you're not who you are, and you need to figure out who you are. And then along that journey, I began to meet people that led me to different ideas. First being the book, the business book, Start at the End, which is essentially decide a outcome of a business before you start it. And then I realized like, I need to apply that to my life. And I just began to look at like, what type of life do I want? What type of person do I want to be? And began to re-engineer everything through that lens. And then what does that do? That then attracts more of the people that can help serve that and give you ideas to bring that along. And that's where I began to meet different people that had more time strategies and using qualitative data and using data to give you insight. These are things I never even understood. I didn't even understand the difference between qualitative data and quantitative data. You know, qualitative being how you feel, quantitative being actually measurable. And I began to just learn all of this stuff. And then I built my life from this state of harmony, right? Like, what would be my ideal way of being? And then how do I grow from there? And then I grew into an existence I couldn't even fathom was possible when I started off on that journey in 2014 and 15,
And did you work on your life first, as in your personal life, or did you go kind of business and personal?
No, it's like, this was the mistake I always made. I always thought if I just found enough success in business, then I would have enough money to then figure out how to create a happy life. And it was like the moment that I was like, nope, I'm going to, what is going to, you know, what, it, not just designing the business, but how is that business vision going to make me happy and make the quality of life that I desire? And I designed them both together and then grew into them over time, rather than hoping something would, you know, rather than creating a destination to get to, then I'll be happy. It was like, why don't I start with happy and then get better and better at being happy and more balanced and more harmonious? And that's really what I did over the last, you know, 6-7 years.
Cleus just had a baby, so he's really trying to figure out the.
I got
to
get the good info today. You know what I mean?
Yeah, hey, man.
How
hey,
long?
Look, you gotta look out into the future, and you gotta know like what life do I want, right? Like you can't just keep working hard and then like oh it'll reveal itself to me. You've got to decide what does 35 look like. You know, what do you want in the bank at 35? Like, what do you even want money for? Like, what do you want to open 20 tracks? You want to do one track that you focus on that's like core and be around your family? Do you want to like be healthier? Do you want to like create other businesses? If you do, why do you want to create it? And how does all of this affect your time and ultimately the important relationships in your life that make you balanced and happy?
Yeah.
Do you
think about that?
Do you
think
journal?
About that?
That was beautiful.
Think
that
about
was
that. Really nice. Do you take clip this? Clip this, and you put it in your iPods, and you just listen to it every morning.
Wow.
Do you jot a lot of thoughts? Journal? Do you do any of that?
I don't journal. I'm, you know, I wish I did. You know, and I know eventually that it is something that I know I will do. I think right now, you know, I track milestones, right? Every time like something sort of major happens in my life, like I'll write it down just because I like to like keep it all sort of organized. And then I do, you know, I do I do my goals like 5-year, 15-year plans every quarter. Right? Like, because my life is just continually evolving at such a pace and I'm just, continuously growing that I constantly sort of have a new sort of, you know, level of clarity on what my long-term goals are on a quarterly basis, not even a yearly basis, you know.
Just hearing you talk, I can tell the clarity.
Yeah, and I started with clarity, right? I fought for the clarity in the beginning when I was lost, and then it was like I went through a lot of in that process. I took personality tests. I did all these things that gave me this understanding of who I was, which then informed the type of plan that I would create. And then I just never stopped hunting clarity on everything.
I've never even thought of that subject.
Yeah.
Like to find clarity in myself. Yeah. I've never even thought of that.
Yeah. And it's worth it, man. And it's like, because if you imagine this, think how excited when you have like a new plan that you're going to go create or go do. There's like this energy that comes with like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. And then when you get there, it's never quite, because it was the chaos that you had to get there and you had to go through so much to actually get there. By the time you get there, it's never quite what you had imagined. So it's like, it's fulfilling and rewarding, but it's only for that day. Only for that little amount of time versus like where you are sort of in this perpetual state of overlapping these new clearer visions on an ongoing basis. So by the time you reach another milestone or a major thing, you already have, you know, 5 or 6 other things you're working on a continuous basis that overlap that you keep getting that same, you know, dopamine from that you're continually creating a better version of you and a better version of your life in the future is where you just live in this perpetual state of enjoying the present and super excited about the possibilities of the future. The difference is you're creating more and more probability of outcomes in the future because you're getting better and better at looking out at what you want, then designing plans to actually get you there. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's heaven on earth. It's heaven on earth.
You always hear over and over, surround yourself with the people you want to.
Yeah.
There's no way you could be unsuccessful hanging out with you. Like, yeah. if I had a week with you, I guarantee I'd be on a whole new venture.
Look, yeah, no, here's right? the problem. Here's the problem. Here's the problem when you hang with me too much. It all makes sense to you when I'm saying it. And then, like, you go try to do it yourself, and it's like, what was he Rob saying talking? Again? Yeah, like, it was like, what a plan. I got a plan. I got, look, it goes from clarity and like perpetually getting dopamine hits and creating a dopamine machine to continuously evolve into your limitless potential to where it's like, man, what was that again? I got to make a plan. Plans are hard. Plans are hard. I'm going back to my systems.
Yeah, we were only 20, I think this is our 27th episode. So we're like a baby podcast.
Yeah.
But we just had a 3-month break already.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're like, dude, there's all kinds of issues. There's all kinds of problems, brand issues. And now we're back. But
And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like, why do you create a podcast, right? Like, it's an extension of your existing brand, and it's a lot easier to sit here and talk to inspiring people that inspire you and ideate and help inspire others than it is to go, you know, shoot a segment of flying helicopters around the country, you know what I'm saying? Whatever it may be, you know, it's like—
That's fun, though.
That's really fun.
Yeah, and again, I think of, like, even from my perspective on you know, why I did the podcast, I knew, like, hey, I just want to begin to build the voice for my philosophy, right? And I immediately automated it, right? I got it to where, like, I hired the entire team and have only using it to be able to begin to create the voice as long as I can. It can limit my time and energy, and I can shoot them in bulk, and then all I want to do is break them out into you know, a handful of different pieces of content that I can then spread across multiple platforms. That all that does is I'm on a, you know, 2 or 3 year build of just my voice as it relates to my philosophy that then I'll monetize in the form of different types of content and the software that I create in the future. But I still, like, everything I do has, like, a deep purpose, short term and long term, and it's then tied back to time and energy. Because it's like, if I couldn't have got that podcast down into where I shoot 25 minute segments, like, I would have quit doing it because it just took too much time and energy to actually do it. You know what I mean?
You know what astonished me about your podcast is that I had never come across it before.
Yeah.
You know, it's—
Yeah, it's really
building
small.
Building with Rob, and I was surprised at how small it is. And, you know, I kind of laughed about your efficiency thing. You're like, is it illegal to have podcasts this short? You know, 24, 25 minutes. So, but it was efficient, man. There's a lot of information in those. And
but again,
just a couple thousand views, I feel like they should really be crushing
it. But you also have to look at, like, you guys are YouTube experts, and I'm not— – there's not even, like, a part of me that's even concerned with the scale of it, right? Because it's the scale through LinkedIn, it's the scale through social media, right? Of these different things that go on sort of an ongoing basis, and it's a long term play, you know. And I'm working out, you know, because it's one of those things where it's like, it's a deeper philosophy that I want to find simplicity on the far side of complexity, so it's super easy to share and that it's understandable so it can make a real impact on people that begin to follow it. But that requires me talking it out from just thinking about it and then turning that talking into words and into structure that makes sense, that other people can actually apply it. And that in itself is this much more difficult process that I've been doing over the last year. So for me, when I think about once I find, and I just keep, you know, working on organizing all of that in a shareable format, and I'll change the entire thing when the book and the software all come out that I'm developing while I'm creating all of it. But it's like, then I want the scale.
Yeah.
Right. Then I'll invest in, like, okay, no, like, now you're going to invest and spend into it. And now, because really I only want to use
laying it out.
That's it. Like, when I eventually launch it and really want to build it, it's going to be a much more concise sort of point of view. For right now, it's just scatter shots of, like, different things that I'm kind of thinking about. And it's really just for scale across social media, TikTok, where it just reaches millions and millions of people through that format in a much more simpler sort of way that's cost effective before I eventually get to releasing the book and the software and all that stuff over the next couple of years.
And is your software essentially, you know, I don't know if everyone on here knows this, but Rob quantitatively, you know, analyzes every single day of his life and how you feel in the morning, how you feel at night, and how you slept. Is that software going to allow people to do that?
Yeah, and look, about that, really what I want it to be is life design through time design, right? Like, it's like people, you know, I think we look at time the wrong way. We look at time as like, schedule the important things, and then like, oh, I don't want to schedule everything, versus like, the time is all that you have, you know? And ultimately, getting to grips with how long you actually want to live, and then looking at sort of the stages and milestones of your existence, and beginning to plan your use of time, and then bring that all the way down to like, what would I do every day, every week, every month, every quarter, every year in my perfect life? And using that as the marker to build you backwards towards what you're doing today, and how do you grow into your ideal use of time, because that would be your ideal way of living. That's really what that software will help you do. Cool. And then you can decide, do I want to do qualitative data and rate how I feel about my day? Do you want to interject your Aura ring and show what your sleep score was? And I think that's you really will neat. Because it'll begin to learn you and understand you and help you sort of shape and build your time in a way that allows you again to go from every moment of the day feeling joy.
I love it.
Right?
Because I want that joy. Can I get a beta version of this?
I'm going to get you a beta version.
I want the beta version, bro.
If I fell into this right now, I feel like I'd spend 8 hours a day trying to plan to be better at time. Like, I would feel like I would be very bad at time.
I feel like it would take a year to really plan your days.
Yeah. And again, I think that right there made me sad. And then her validating for you, that made me even sadder. But that is in where I think the innovation has to occur, right? I want you to be able to fill out, here's all these things that I love and want to do and wish I do, and then boom, it lays out the rhythm of your year for you. And then now you can begin to be adaptive and adjust and see what works and get better and better at understanding your time, because I do believe it's a skill set, you know? Because it took me 5 years before I tracked all the data every day, you know? And then, you know, when I finally committed to tracking all of my time, you know, that's a bold, like, undertaking, and it's a habit unto itself. And now it's like, I just love it so much. I love looking at the end of each month of like, oh, what did I, oh, look at that.
Well, I feel like it's kind of like a secret tool that most people wouldn't even think about.
Yeah. Right.
I don't even thought about it. I hear you talk about
it. And look, you just keep getting older, and these things keep coming up. Oh, I do want to do that. What should I do? We want to move. It's like, and life comes at you. And if you learn to control time, you understand the value of all your time, and then you begin to, you see so much further. And then you understand the first and second order consequences when you commit to something that, no, this isn't going to just, this seems amazing, but this is going to take so much actual time to execute. Is it worth it from a time and energy standpoint? When you just begin to see the world through that lens, you automatically live with more intention and say no to a lot more things, because now you understand the effect that it has on like the potential quality of your life and disrupting that quality. You know?
The fact that you're sitting on this podcast right now talking about this makes me feel really good.
It took us a long time to get here.
It did.
Us a long time to get here.
But thank you so much.
Yeah. I hope this is awesome. Brings quality of your day up.
And nothing brings me greater joy than talking about it.
You know what I'm saying?
And like, I love even talking about now what did happen to me, because it's also about adaptability. You know, it's depending on how you feel. Like, I don't, like, even though I have this rhythm of how things work, and there's certain things I can't change. Like today, since I shoot next door, I was just going to come over after I shot, but then Sterling tested positive for COVID, so we had to cancel today, you know. And so to me, it's not like, like, yes, it changes the rhythm. We got to reschedule that day. I would rather shoot earlier in the day that we changed it around, then I can still take my kids to school and then pick up both my kids, like where I wouldn't have been able to do it on the shoot day. So I just rearranged back into the time, back into the best use of the day. Now, of course, I got up at 4:30 and, you know, was in the gym and meditated and brain trained and had all my supplements.
What'd you have for breakfast?
And I had a shake and a bunch of supplements. That's kind of what I.
You got some anti-aging secrets, don't you?
I mean, look,
you know some stuff.
I don't know what I'm going to do to keep me healthy on the cellular level for as long as possible, but I certainly take the supplements to do.
Because you want to live to 100.
Yeah, 114 and 54 days, right? It's like want to experience 1 million hours of life, right? And wow. And but I feel like I'm undershooting the mark.
Who
honestly
thinks of this stuff?
I like
though
that. Yeah, so 120 would be nice.
Is it hard for you to shut off this? What you're telling us right now, is it hard for you to shut that off? Because you got this beautiful family now.
Yeah.
And when you're playing with your kids, we have mm-hmm. kids. Are you able to shut off?
Yeah.
Easy.
Easy.
For me, I feel like I would just be like numbers.
But here's the problem is you know, you have to realize your mind, this is how your mind operates, right? There's five stages. You're either present in the middle and experiencing what's happening. You're either present future where you're creating a better future, right? Or you're worrying about the future. Right. So if you swing up to worry, right, like it sucks the energy out of you and you're here, then on the past, you're either rectifying something that has happened and taking action and you know, something has happened, you're changing, or you're dwelling on the past. And for people like if you want to be present, you have to. Your mind has to be balanced in a way that you're never swinging down to dwelling in the past or worrying about the future. You're either taking action of creating a better future or handling something that happened or sitting in the present. And it's only when your mind swings and is where that disruption and inability to be present with your family is. But since I have so many systems in place and have automated so much of my life and designed my time in such a way that I live this balanced, harmonious existence, when I'm with my kids, I might dabble up into thinking about something I want to create a little bit, like if we're driving or whatever, but it allows me to be super present because my mind is so balanced. You know what I mean?
Clarity.
Versus, yeah, and it's everything. When you do everything with intention, then you're not, because think of where I'm not thinking about the numbers. The numbers are just part of the output of the system I've created. And you know, it's the drain that happens when you're constantly thinking, oh, what do I got to do about this thing I got to do? Oh, I got to get to that. Then you're rushing around like, oh, I got to get to this. Like I hunt friction all day long in my life. And it's like every time there's friction, I create a solution or system to eliminate it so that I just continually stay in this sort of optimized state that isn't just a balanced life, but is a balanced mind, you know.
Where does one start? Where does one start? You're listening right now. You're probably thrown back a bit. It sounds overwhelming. Obviously, you're not going to start where you're
off.
At.
They've turned off.
Whoever's listening right now.
No, whoever's here. Left.
Get up at 4:30 and start brain training.
That's it. Get up at 4 and start training your brain.
Just go. No, there's people listening right now that are like, this sounds amazing. I'm sitting here. This sounds amazing. Yeah. I could get.
Yeah. Pure happiness.
I could do so much better for myself and my family. Those listening, that they have this business idea, they have all these goals, but they're probably just listening to their phone. And when they stop listening to this podcast, they're scrolling Instagram and and we're sucked into that world. Where does one start? Yeah. What's the first step?
Look, I think you trailed it a little bit deep, right? Because I think if it's like you listen to this, you get all motivated, and then you go back to doing nothing. It's the structure of the way your life operates, right? And you get stuck in these systems that are a lot of times not even your fault. Your parents raised you a certain way. The way you went to school, you're kind of raised in these frameworks and these structures. A lot of times, for guys like us, like, oh, we're gonna break out of this, like the way this whole thing is. We're going to create our own destiny, you know what I mean, type of thing. But you're still left with the way you were raised and the construct, the way you understand money and time and all these different things that make up the way that your life operates. So it's a much more difficult thing, I think, to just like turn a switch on and start and go. I think it starts with awareness. And I think if you ever want to truly be happy, you've got to define what that is. Mm. You have to define what that is. You have to ask yourself, what would I do each day? What would make me happy? How much money do I need? What type of job do I want? What would I do during the week? How much would I work? Who would I spend the time with? You've got to begin to map out that would be a happy life, because that is the start at the end mentality of man, if I could get there, that would be amazing. And then build your plan backwards and then grow and evolve into the person that you want to be, that you believe from right now is where what you think would truly make you happy. Now, as you begin to march towards that, you're going to change and evolve, and what you begin to understand about yourself and the world around you is going to change and evolve, and that vision for what happiness is going to become more clear and more dynamic, which may determine the time that it may take you to get there or the things that you actually need to do to get there. It's sort of this moving thing. But if you never define it, if you never define where you're going to go, it's like, I'm going to take this trip to California from Maine without a map or having any idea what the freeway system is. I'm just going to start driving and I know I'm going to get there someday. That's like how most people approach it, rather than, I know it's exactly 2,300 miles and I have to take these four freeways, I'll be there in 2 days and 6 hours. Then it's like, all right, here we go. Then maybe you have a flat tire. Maybe you run out of gas, whatever it may be, but you're always making progress towards the destination that you started with in the end. And it's just something that people, for some reason, and I was the same way all the way up to 40 almost. Mm. You know what I mean? I really didn't even discover this way of thinking till I was closer to your age. You know what I mean? And then I'm got better and better at it over time. And then I became a life and a version of myself I didn't even know was even possible to exist, because I couldn't even have envisioned being at this, the audacity that I would be that I'd be the data guy and it's qualitative and insights. I track all my time. The audacity of the 38-year-old being that's where you're headed in 10 years. You know what I mean? I would have wanted all the money I have now and my way of life and all the happiness, but never in a million years could I have imagined that this is what I would have expanded into. But that's what it was. It's knowledge of self, knowledge of reality, and really knowledge of the ability to create a better future on an ongoing basis pushes you into this limitless place you could have never imagined.
So when the 360 deal happened and you kind of had this realization, changed your way of thinking, how did you in that moment picture what your happiness would be today? And it's obviously, that's hard to decide that now it's today, calculating all those numbers. What did you predict back then, or did it just kind of?
It was more global back then, right? It was I want to be married and have kids. I don't live a lifestyle that's, going to lead me in that direction. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think it was I didn't understand money. I needed to learn money. I just always made a ton of money. I didn't understand money. I think I didn't even understand. I did all these companies, but why am I doing them? Right? I think it was these bigger questions that I had to ask myself. And it took me, I would say it probably took me, two almost 3 years before I had the full sort of life plan, if you will, in place that I could begin to build it. It wasn't there was this discovery phase of needing to learn about myself and what are the things I even need to learn to be happy. But even back then, I wasn't saying, okay, what do I need to do to be happy? It was I need to change. And so I just started changing and tried to evaluate these things. And then what happened? Then the universe began to bring the tools to me, right? Then the Start at the End book shows up. And then randomly, I had cleaned up my way of being and I was the next, the next girl that I date is my wife. And then kept it super pure. And then my wife showed up, and then even trying to impress my wife, she was super into personal development and Tony Robbins and wanted to go see Tony Robbins. And randomly Tony Robbins reached out to me and I'm like, oh my God, this girl, we had just started dating and I'm like, oh man, man, oh, this is going to be so good.
This is going to be easy.
It's going to be so good. As a matter of fact, Tony Robbins reached out to me. And like, because he had just put out his book, Money Master the Game. And so I really met with him to impress her. Only that book changed my life. Wow. Because it made me realize, God, look at all this. You've made millions, lost millions. Why do you even want money? How does money even work for you? You don't even understand money. And I think as I began the journey, and it's like that in all aspects of my existence, the as I continue to evolve and identify what I need to learn and grow into, then the universe provides the answers and the people and the stuff that I need to learn along the way that has continued to grow and evolve me to the place that I am today.
Wow. And is there a story that along the lines of meeting your wife and starting to date that you used a helicopter to?
That's correct. That's correct.
Oh, you got to tell it.
We love helicopters.
We got it. We're big helicopter guys.
I don't trust helicopters.
We don't care about the love story.
I just, but from a, it's more like an episode of The Bachelor than your adventure coptering. But it was, you know, essentially we had just gone to text and, you know, because
graduated from the DMs.
Graduated from the DMs. Got nice. The number. I was well like, you know, she had had this interview and talking about wanting to pet a tiger and swim with sharks. And I'm like, well, this is great. I could be a great life coach. I've been attacked by both. And so, you know, and along the way, like then it's like she posts. You know, we're texting back and forth, and she posts this thing about her parents being in Dayton, Ohio. Her mom being in Dayton, Ohio, and I'm like, oh, what do you got? What connection do you have from Dayton, Ohio? It's like, oh, my mother and brother live there, and that's where my mom's from, right? So I'm like, oh, this is crazy. Like, all right, this is already my destiny here. Yeah. So now I'm like convinced. Haven't even spoke on the phone. I'm like, this is my wife.
Wow.
This is straight off of photos and like. Two DMs and like two text messages. This is who I meant to spend the money.
You just DM.
Yeah, this is like, ooh. I mean, nothing. And so
slid in the DMs.
That's it. And then like for me to be so convinced, and I'm like connected to Dayton. This is my wife. So I've always had this like weird. Let me jump back. So it's like first date. Do you want to go out? Sure, what do you want to do? I looked on her Twitter and she was like talking about this dog kennel. There was a dog kennel that was going to, they had to get rid of all the dogs or else they were going to be euthanized. And so, you know, it was a few hours away and I thought it was like an hour away. So I was going to suggest to her for a first date that we go save some puppies. And so.
This guy, man.
You know what I mean? And so. Like, but I realized it was like 2.5 hours away. So as a joke, I'm like, what do you say we get a helicopter and go rescue some puppies? And like a half hour later, she's like, sure. And I'm like, what? So sure. Now I'm like, what? So I'm like,
staring at the phone waiting.
No, I'm like, can somebody get us a helicopter? I got to get a helicopter. And believe it or not, my first date was probably like, you know, 100 yards from here, like right across at the Van Nuys airport here. And so I'm picked her up. It was straight episode of Catfish, right? We never spoke on the phone.
No way.
Like, you know, she lived in like the hood, you know, because she moved from a small town in Northern California and moved, like, got a cheap apartment, had no idea where she was. Rob Dyrdek pulls up in a Ferrari, you know what I'm saying, for date one, like full Catfish style, 458 Italia.
Nice, red.
You know, no, white and black.
White and black, of course,
but
classic.
But, you know, it's not an episode of Catfish. She's real, I'm real, we're moving along. And then in this particular situation, time in my life, you know, I was convinced I was meant to marry somebody that was connected to Hawaii. And so I, as the drive over there, I'm like, don't even ask her about Hawaii. Her mom lives in Dayton, Ohio. Like, you guys are meant to be. Like, who cares about Hawaii? And so as soon as she gets in that Ferrari, I'm like, hey, how you doing? Do you have any connection to Hawaii? And so she's like, well, my grandparents lived there and my sister lives there now. And I'm like, well, all right, we should get
That'll
married.
That'll work.
We should get married. And so as we took the helicopter ride.
You remember the type of helicopter?
Oh, man, I don't. But it was a bigger, more
four
safe
four
one.
Four seats in the back?
Yeah. I don't know, but if because on our third year anniversary, I rented another helicopter to go to Catalina.
Yeah.
Our third year wedding anniversary, and that thing was sketchy. That was one of those you barely fit in there.
How many seats total are we talking?
2.5. You know what I mean? Like even the pilot was like
barely. 2 blades?
I don't even know if there was 2 blades.
It's just one blade.
You know what I'm saying?
Listen, babe, I already booked it. You know, it's here.
We'll be fine.
Yeah, that's really what it was. And then on that flight, she then told me a story midway on, flying over the Central Valley to go rescue these puppies. She then told the story that she was diagnosed with a rare blood disease at 10 and given 6 months to live. And that Make-A-Wish granted her wish, and her final wish was to swim with dolphins. So they flew her to Hawaii, where she swam with dolphins I'm not going to let myself die. I'm going to beat this. And then they had like a special new treatment that they tried on her, and it put her into remission and worked.
Wow.
But then I'm like, okay, this is my wife.
That's the Hawaii.
This is my wife. Yeah. Wow. And you know, for me, it's like, it's a beautiful story, but it's also like, her sort of commitment to personal development and evolving herself. I work really hard and I'm successful. What do I need to work on me for, type of thing? And that sort of like, call it forever love, that now got me to see what forever felt like rather than what was next, on top of like this sort of like, developing yourself and growing, was this culmination that really, really started the evolution of changing who I am as a person and ultimately becoming the person that I am today. And also why, it's unwavering my first line commitment to the quality of our relationship and our life over everything, because like she gave me this life that I have and this ability to realize my entire potential. It is also why there's no aspect of me that ever wavers on the continual optimization of our love and our family first sort of position of where the family sits in my way of being,
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I loved, I think it was her story yesterday, you asking her 1 to 10, like all of these questions.
Yeah, yeah.
And you guys do that
nightly
or weekly?
Well, no, what I do every day is I ask her how she feels 0 to 10. So that we have a conversation about how, and she calls it as liked. I know you love me, but do you like me? And so it's like, and I just continue to optimize around how she feels. And then the other thing that we do is then once a week, we write down what we celebrate, mm-hmm. What we want to celebrate that week. And then on January 30th of every year, we then read them all to each other, right?
That's
so you just have this like whole year of just celebrations, right? So it's this like,
you're gonna put me in the doghouse, dude.
Yeah.
You got chill. Like every holiday, you got the house full of flowers and the balloons
and the hug boots.
I'm like, I gotta go on her account and unfollow you so she don't see this.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember the Ugg boot story?
What?
The Ugg boot story?
No.
He hated Ugg boots. Mm. Wouldn't let me get them.
Oh, man.
And it was like the same thing. I was like, and look what he did for Valentine's Day. He got her one in every color.
Yeah, thanks, bro.
No, it was
because you're always looking out for us other guys.
Made the Uggs and the heart sign, and then put the roses and all the Uggs for her. She still never wore them.
Nice.
She knew. She still never wore them.
She never wore them. That was all for the
gram.
But you're
like, look, you're like, I, it's this continual optimization as it relates to, I send her an email every morning of everything I'm doing with a love quote every day. Like, then we take the kids to school every morning. Then we have the conversation about how she felt the day before. And then if we miss a couple days for whatever reason, like, then we, sit down and go through it. And then we have family syncs where we get the whole family organized with all the assistants. We have Wednesday night movie night, Thursday night pasta night, Thursday morning breakfast date. Like, a therapist comes to the house every other week. Like, on Sundays we do sushi. Like, we stay in this, continuous rhythm and deep communication on every single thing, so that we're just in this sort of continuous growth together and never feel disconnected in any way, shape, or form. And then, like, despite planning all that and keeping all of that, like, it's still depending on how she's feeling or what happened is happening in her, like, state that I'll cancel the rest of the day and take her out or do whatever it may be. It's like really trying to optimize our lives for the energy of us and our children. It is the beauty of having time mastered in such a way and then having so much control of so many of the different parts of your universe that you can really, really optimize for a relationship, especially because it's the most important one in your life.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Incredible,
sorry,
bro. Sorry. You're killing me.
That's a rip.
She's sitting over here like, what was I thinking?
In itself is a skill set.
I picked her up in a white work van.
Hey,
that's what
you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, we did. We started hard.
Yeah.
Still got her, bro.
But now you can take her in a helicopter to save some puppies.
Yep.
Yeah, you could. And you can take her in your own helicopter.
Yeah.
You know,
with your own puppies.
The 458, me asking if it was red. Bad call because, you know, going back, I think about all the time how in awe my friends and I were about your black on black Yukon. I mean, that thing. That thing to my buddies and I when we were in high school was the most, the baddest vehicle you could have. And then you had the white on black Tahoe. That's some inspiration right there. What's in the garage now? If we could just change gears for a second.
Yeah, we should.
Well, look, you know, so ever since I transitioned from self-preservation to generational preservation, right, where it's like this idea of how do I make impact for hundreds and hundreds of years, including the family. That's transitioned to even how I approach the cars that I get, right? So now I only tailor make Ferraris, right? So I do like the full custom, like I create a full brand.
Settle down.
Really?
You know, so I create a full brand. Like I've just created a concept for an SF90 Spider, right? That's like, I call it Angel Lightning. It's based off of like Ride the Lightning by Metallica and the Angel Light Stone, which is like grounding and protective, you know, because it's the electric hybrid. So it's this like crazy blue, and then each one is labeled right RD-002 AL Angel Lightning. So like every single one, I'm basically creating like custom one-off sort of, you know, markered cars that will be its own collection within sort of the Ferrari collection of collectible cars, you know.
Ferrari guy.
That's
color?
Well, that one would be like it's called Avio Met, which is like this like it looks like this like light blue, metallic light blue. And then I did a Blue Laguna, which is, you know, off the Lakers, the 1960s Lakers jersey, inspired by the Blue Magic vinyl of Jay-Z's Blue Magic song.
Really, you are thoughtful in this process.
Yeah, and that one's called Blue Magnetic, and it's Blue Laguna and with a silver rooftop, right? Like, but that's the amazing part of like what Ferrari does. And Ferraris are more like collecting art, you know what I mean? Because like even my GTS, which is, you know, the V12, like, you know, convertible Spider 812, like, you know, I got it in, you know, 2 years ago. It's still worth $200,000 more than I paid for it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like that's sort of the range of like those harder to get type of cars, and you know? But
do you still have a daily or do you drive? I mean, I know you drive your kids to school.
Yeah, I have Range Rover.
That's a Honda Civic.
Yeah, for the kids.
Okay. Range is good.
You know, then I got an M8 competition for like my like, you know, flying around the city car. Now, you know, we got the black on black Escalade, you know.
Oh, you do? Okay.
You know what
I
mean?
Well, I was getting worried. I was kind of hoping.
We still got the black on black Escalade for somebody to drive me around. Because even though I have all these cars, I still don't, still barely drive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
My buddy Ryan would be proud of the black on black Escalade.
Yeah, he would.
I think about that video though, where you're in your, I think you're in the white Tahoe, and the guys were trying to talk to you. They're like, "Hey, Rob," and it's just like your cars were that
still
cool.
I still feel bad for that guy.
That was a classic.
I have one other random thing I want to throw in. Do you have any horses currently? Because you've kind of always been a horse guy.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, at one point I had 13 13 horses, right? Because I invested in a ton of race horses and jockeyed the
one.
Mega Heat. Mega Heat went on to win like 19 different races.
Mega Heat was out there.
It was real, man. Mega Heat was like one of the most winning horses I ever had.
I just love that Mega Heat.
Yeah, but it's like, and look, one of the scariest things I've ever done, without a doubt, is the only time I've ever almost died was getting pulled into the wave. And then the scariest thing I've ever done, beyond all the car stunts, anything, is jockeying a horse for a race.
You
explode. And it's like, if you don't stay stable, you just basically fall off a car going like 50 miles an hour, you know. But I actually right now, the new Ferrari truck is called the Purisson. And I'm doing a full this sort of matte maroon colorway based off of the horse Assault, who won the Triple Crown in 1946. And the song, I was playing the song for my daughter this morning as I was explaining to her. As I was driving my 5-year-old to kindergarten this morning, I was explaining to her about this new concept I have for this Ferrari truck, and that the theme of the song is the Scorpions. There's no one like you. I can't wait for a night. So I'm driving my daughter to school this morning, explaining to her how I came up with this entire new concept for Purisson, the Ferrari Purisson, which means thoroughbred in Italian, and that this is going to be the song and the colorway. And I'm like, do you like it? She's like, it's good.
It's good. You know. Let me ask you something. That's you just kind of made this idea come up. We constantly, even with the success we have and the way we were raised, very poor, we fear for our children, in a sense of, you know, the way they live versus the way we live, and the way I watch my mother and father work with their hands, and they have not seen that, right? Yeah. They just assume we have this.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts for your children to because you've created this, all the hustle, required. What are your thoughts for your kids? They're hitting an age. You have to be looking at them like, how am I going to teach them the value of hard work?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I don't think about that.
You don't? I freak out all the time.
I think that's a paradigm that you're putting on yourself that's dangerous.
Really?
Because you're different. You are who you are. They're who they look at as what's possible. You've got to give them the tools and the understanding of like, this is the process to make something like this possible. But ultimately, you want to make your version of this. Me and your mother are extremely happy, and we found success in our own sort of way that we really enjoy that allowed us to live this life. You want to make your version of this. Yes. You know, I don't prescribe to like you needing any sort of, to be like I was type of thing, because I don't think it's attainable. I'm just trying to give you the continuous skills. So the only thing that I instill in them deeply is that life's greatest gift is learning. And you can learn anything. And you just want to, and learning isn't what you learn in school. It's like you just learn to put together this Lego. You just learn to put your seatbelt on yourself. You just learn to fix the toilet by yourself. That's learning and growing. That's what life's about. You can decide what you want to learn and learn anything. And you want to learn things that are ultimately served to make you happier in life, right? Yeah. And so for me, because it's extreme, you know, in the way that I live with these kids, and sort of then even in the world that we live in here, I'm not like going to try to even put them in a position of like, oh, you got to be normal. I'm like, you've entered the world on a different level. I'm going to try to do my best to instill the core values that I believe will lead you to a happy life, and then help you get better and better at developing those skills. And then you apply them to whatever level life that you want. And I don't have any fear like that. You know, my kids are going to be spoiled to the point where they where they don't like going to airports like their dad doesn't go to airports. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think like that's going to be, a thing. Like, I'm, and to me, it's, I see it in, in really wealthy people that have amazing kids that thought from that way versus like really wealthy people that try to hide how wealthy they actually are and then try to like instill like you've got to try to be like me. And your kid gets smart enough. He knows that like you're wealthy and what it is. And then it just creates this disconnect. Like I want to start teaching my kids about money now because I didn't get taught about money. And despite making money, it created a big problem in my existence and like not being healthy. Like my parents are never healthy. Like, you know, I'm all of these things that I want to instill in them from a core value perspective, then I will be there the entire step of the way. Spend the majority of time with my wife and family, and I always will.
Yep.
You know, and be a part of like shaping and helping them, you know, grow into to fulfilled human beings, you know, and then making sure to protect them from, you know, the outside forces that could potentially damage that you know, those core belief systems. Because what happened for me that I got lucky is I took risks at a young age by myself and found success, which then built the belief system in me that I could do anything rather than, you know, a lot of the things that I tried at a young age that if it wouldn't have worked out of what it would have done to my self-belief, which ultimately laid the foundation for the success I've had, you know.
And as a high school dropout, do you want your kids to go to education? You want to put them through college or
you know,
let them decide?
I think, you know, they go to this, you know, in LA, it's like the most insane school system ever where it's like, you know, you got to, you know, spend like, you know, $600,000 a kid to put them through kindergarten, through high school, you know, and in the private school system here. And it's, you know, we tried to get into a private school and didn't get into it, which is like the most insane thing I could even fathom. You know, it's like,
you got turned down.
Yeah. You know, it was devastating. So the crazy thing is when you control so much of your reality and, you know, basically I'm insulated against rejection almost in the world. And when that school denied us, I didn't even know how to process the feelings of being rejected. It had been so long since I had felt like core rejection that it like, I couldn't even, despite having, you know, all these amazing things happening at the time, it like tore the soul out of me for like 10 days.
Did you tell them you know Tony Robbins?
Look, they didn't care who, look, they don't care who you know. Wow. You know what I mean? But they really ultimately, because we didn't go to college as why they didn't choose us for that school.
What?
Like they're trying to curate like the educated type of people. And so, you know, for me, I wouldn't push it. You know, you know, one of the companies that I built it with one of our, you know, big partners in a couple of different companies we've done. I built it with his son, and his son was going to Harvard, and his son dropped out of Harvard to build this company. And I, you always look, he's so smart. I'm just like, man, this kid doesn't need to go to school, you know? But I always feel like, like he's so young. Did he really actually need to do this company, right? Like he probably should have just went and got his Harvard education because he's got the rest of his life to go build companies, where my mentality of like, he's too smart to go to school. Let him go build this thing. I'll help him. You know, I second guess, you know, as it relates to what that is, because organized knowledge is super important if you know exactly why you're going to college and what you need to learn, because it's based off of what you want to go and do. I think there's a ton of value in it from that perspective. But if you fully understand like what you want to develop and become, and it sits outside that world and you want to chase that, you know, I certainly wouldn't, you know, say, you got to go to school. And if you wanted to quit high school, I'd be like, whatever. You know.
Oh, that's good to know. Put it on record.
If they
want to quit high school,
yeah,
it's already approved.
Well, you couldn't get them in the good school. So. Yeah.
Well, no, we actually ended up getting them in this really amazing school, and that was our second choice. But we didn't end up filling out an application, and then they allowed us to do it. But I really respect their philosophy and how they're like they look at shaping children and. But again, I'm not sold on it. You know, I'm not sold that the school system feels more like a place where you you get the damage rather than you get the education, right? It's like you're trying to get through this entire sort of junior high through high school with the least amount of damage before you're able to find yourself. I think that is limited in these smaller private schools, right? And it's monitored at a higher level. But again, I'm not 100% sold on what the right direction is, and I think it'll be different depending on who the kids evolve into over time, you know.
And what's your thoughts on like homeschool or hiring
a
teacher?
Yeah, I mean, we wavered on it, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We wavered on it, and I just still think there's value in the interaction, and there's just a layer deeper that I think can be achieved from being inside the framework of schooling, because schooling is still this beautiful framework, mm-hmm. because it's like you're graded, so it's quantified, and then you're graded on your growth, so you're guiding evolution, you're growing a mind, you're growing ability to learn, growing an understanding, you're expanding an individual, and then it's on you when you get out of school to figure out what you're going to learn and what you're going to evolve into. That's sort of like what's missing, and a lot of the happier people will, you know exactly what they want to do in high school and go to college for it, then get a job exactly what they want to do and then love it and then grow in that industry or whatever it may be and have an incredible life all the way through. You know, that's when the framework actually works really well and guides your evolution that goes from grades counting to now salary and role counting and growing into the person that you wanted to become that you saw in high school you had potential to become, right? That's when the framework still has a lot of value, but the problem is there's nothing built for people or children to grow into after college and high school if you don't know what you want to do, you know.
It's a lot.
Yeah, I like that
it's
perspective.
Too deep.
No, I like that perspective deep. Because, you know, I think a lot of kids have a hard time when they want to get out of college and their parents are like, no, you have to finish. This is absolutely everything. And, you know, to have that perspective to just be able to say, hey, listen, if you got an opportunity, take it. You know?
Yeah, and to me, look, it's fundamental. You have to, it's about being healthy. It's about understanding time. It's about understanding money. It's about understanding yourself and continually building the awareness to know what gives you energy and takes energy from you and learning how to continually evolve into your potential and have that start at the end mentality. It doesn't matter what you choose to do or what you're going to do. And that's what I would say would be the difference in me as it relates to being a parent, where it's like I'm not fearful because I know I'm going to raise kids that are capable of doing that. They just have to decide what that is and then we'll always be there to help them support that. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
Amazing. Listen, I know we're only going to touch on a fraction of your skill set, your inspiration here. So where's the best place for everybody to hear? Instagram?
Yeah.
YouTube?
You know, look, you know,
where's
just,
these clips?
It's just Instagram's where they're all living, you know. Build with Rob is the 25-minute rants of
gotta hit that
philosophy.
Up.
Build with Rob.
And really, you know, it's just interviews like this where I get to share the philosophy with like-minded people that are on the same sort of mission of just how can I continue to evolve into the best version of myself, which ultimately leads to how do I get happier and happier over time, you know.
So what's the number one biggest for your day, for everything you're talking about, what's the number one? If you could only take away one of these things, what would it be?
That you can't take away one.
You can't take away one.
Like every single thing in your existence matters.
Okay.
Everything matters. Every thought, every action, every decision, everything that you do matters. It all integrates together to make up the whole you. And for some reason, we just get so focused on if we do this thing or that thing, rather than how do we look at all of us and everything and work on making everything great, which in turn creates a great you rather than focusing on one.
And what if you're too scared to take risk?
Then you should sleep a lot. You know,
just rest it out.
Just sleep. Watch sleep. Netflix.
You're out of here.
You know what I'm saying? Just drink a lot. You know what I mean? Look, I think what you can do to eliminate the fear of risk is learn as much as you can. you can dedicate much more time to learning and understanding something, because any goal that there is, the probability of it happening, if you understand something super well, you know you're going to do it with 100% of time, then it's just a matter of time. You're an expert in it. If you have a limited amount of knowledge in it, but you're at least familiar with what it is, you're going to start a YouTube or a podcast, but you understand you've already built content, you understand your audience, you understand how to be, it's a much easier probability to create the success in it. It's then when you get down to something you sort of know, and then you're just, all you focus on is the outcome that it's going to deliver to you, that's when it gets very risky and the likelihood of success is very limited. And then when you don't understand something whatsoever and have no knowledge and go try and do it, it's like 95% it's going to fail, you know? And so it's, you know, what will eliminate the fear of risk is focusing on the knowledge and the understanding. So by the time you do take the risk, you've learned enough about it and understand what you're actually risking rather than a blind risk of going for it, you know?
I feel like it's hard to make it anywhere quickly without taking a lot of risks.
Yep.
So I like, you know, that education on that subject. If you got it, take it.
Yeah, you got to learn. You're going to learn along the way. And anyone that it takes a really long time grinding it out for the first couple of years to get there, you had to like learn all those different things of like, and talk to different people to get to a place to finally begin to understand the formula or the system that you could begin to apply on a consistent basis to now grow the success that you knew you could make happen when you started it. But you had so much to learn on what that even is in the beginning.
And do you spend a lot of time on your phone? I'm sure you know the exact number. I'm just curious.
I don't.
Oh, you
don't? It's funny when you say that. It's like, you know, but I don't know. I don't. It's not like.
It's obviously a tool for learning.
Yeah. And to me, a tool for inspiration, you know, I don't like when I think about the phone and its use for me, it's like, I don't know. It's still a form of relaxation in my mind.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It's not like, you know, if I'm sitting, you know, watching TV with me and my wife and it's like, I'm checking out or looking, you know, trying to find out who won the Triple Crown because I want to pick one of these colorways to build a car around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? These sort of random things that you're sort of dedicating time to. But I don't know. I look at the phone as this amazing, think how lucky we are.
It's insane.
To live in this, at this time of the human experience where it's like in the palm of your hand, you can see anybody and talk to them and search up anything and look at anything and find anything. And then we get to see what other people's lives are and have this insight to like everything. I think it's incredible. Based off of the structure of how I use time in my life, I just don't have a ton of time that I would be able to dedicate. I don't get lost in the phone necessarily.
Okay.
But I'm on there enjoying life.
I feel like I waste too much time on that. You know, after thinking about how important, you know, you treat every hour, I feel like I just, you know, I waste too much time on my phone.
But again, it's not that you're wasting time on the phone as much as you don't have a reason to fill that time.
Mm.
You know, and it's like when I have just gotten to a place where I fill all the time with intention, so I don't end up with very little gap time. Mm. And even for me, when something gets canceled and I got a big block, it's not like I dive right in and like fill that time. And I almost like let that time breathe and then I kind of do random things, you know. And even for me in my life flow, you know, if I get up at 4:30, I still, you know, spend a big chunk of that being able to just sort of get caught up and look at different things. Like, I don't necessarily schedule what I'm doing. I have that sort of reflective and flow time that I add to my time that while everybody's asleep and no meetings could occur or something like that, like, you know, in order to be able to spend more time just free thinking. But it really is, you know, if you don't have a use for it, then you just go to the easiest thing, straight to your pocket, and like, let's just look at some random things, you know, for 2 hours.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, you can burn up 2 hours quick.
I heard a little quote on your phone a couple weeks ago. It's like, you're not lazy, you're bored.
Yeah.
That really hit me.
Yeah.
It's a lot of time, I'm laying on the couch with my phone, and it's because I'm not delegating that time to something useful.
Yeah.
Right. I'm bored.
Yeah.
I'm just going to lay on my phone.
But it's also like you, it's hard to you have to, it could be 2 hours for your phone, could be the dedicated time. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be bored. It's also like, when do you want to actually work on things? You know what I mean? Like, I like doing my deeper work in the mornings and before the afternoon. So I build my schedule around that. And sometimes I have to clear days to do deep work where I focus on one thing for a full day to be able to push it along. You know, like, I just try to make it based off of how that I feel, which ultimately is the rhythm of the way your time and life works, because you want to feel, you want to be as consistent as you can of just feeling good and not being in that place of feeling rushed or feeling like I got to do this or worrying about it or dwelling on something that had happened. Like, that's the state that you need to get to. And for some people, that is just, you know, taking an hour to not think about anything, you know, to keep you there. You know what I mean? Not every hour, even in a perfect design life, has to be perfectly designed. You know what I mean?
Gotta have bathroom break, man. Is bathroom break on your schedule?
It is not. I don't micro it. I keep it. Like, even the way I do all the tagging, it's just life other, which would be eating or, you know, showering or whatever. Then it's just health. It's life, wife, life, kids. Is kind of what makes up sort of that chunk of everything, you know. And then it's just work is work, TV, work, theoretic machine, or work flow, freestyle, you know. And it's the most incredible thing, because you just, like, at the end of each month, you have all your qualitative data. You know, for me, I've been extra disciplined this year. I haven't missed one day of getting up at 5, brain training, meditating, eating clean, not drinking, getting in the gym and taking supplements. Like, I haven't missed one day.
Congrats.
This entire year. And so you get to see the 100%, right? Then you see your qualitative numbers so high. You see your sleep scores higher. You see your wife scores higher. Like, you know, you see all this. Then you see it against your time and you're like, man, look at all that I did in the first 2 months of this year with 26% of my time. Jeez. You know what I mean? It's like you get to see it all, and it just makes it it motivates me to get even more disciplined, right? After kind of, you know, getting more and more disciplined over these last couple of years, it was like, man, what if I just do 100% year? You know, could I do a year where I don't, like, miss one thing for the whole year? And so far it's like, you know, 100%. And it's like, you know, it's not about hitting that number. You know, I stopped drinking, a pretty decent amount of time ago, and just stopped eating snacks or eating anything other than, like, fuel and supplements, right? So you just put nothing in your body. Then you spend so much time working out in sauna and supplements. It's like this compound effect of then how clear you are, then your decision making and your time management and managing everything around you, and then your experience of the present so much more rich. So you're just experiencing life at this, like, much higher continuous, much higher level in this continuous state, that it's like, I'm not motivated. I'm like, this is amazing. Like, why would I not want to live like this?
Even the thought of it's motivating. Yeah. Even the thought of, I'm going to get on this schedule, it really is motivating.
Yeah.
And I wonder, for me, it feels like, holy cow, it's already March. Like, does time still fly by at the same pace? Or does it feel slower?
No, time is as slow as it can be. Because imagine this. Here's the interesting part about it. You know, I refer to it as, like, time completely slows down, but it's been slow for so long. So I don't look at my kids and think, like, oh, they're growing up fast. I look at, like, I was there for every moment of this and, like, evolved and grew with them. And I don't look back and say, where did the time go? I know exactly where it went. You know what I mean? Like, I don't look back and, like, what happened over the last couple of years? I know exactly what happened because I tracked it all and optimized my life for it. Wow. And so it's like, because again, the goal isn't to reach any destination. The destination is living this amazing day every new day. And then when you live with such intention that you just know that like you're predicting the future with high probability and then experiencing joy with high probability on every day. So when you reflect behind you, it's like you know why you did it and what you did and how it made you feel. And for the most part in the recent, you know, few years, it's all been amazing. And then you are excited about the future. So you're having this beautiful pace of the human experience.
I like that.
That's different. You know what I mean?
I don't love that feeling when I'm like, wow, where did the last 2 months go? Because I've been running around like with chicken with my head cut off.
What we're always thinking.
Which is what
we're always thinking.
I know for a fact we both experience that all the time.
Dude, especially with that we have four
right there
kids.
Is enough to,
every day is like, dude, they're getting so big. What happened?
Yeah.
Well, that's a very attractive part of your whole mastering your life is if I can slow down my time, I would.
But again, look, it's like not a matter of doing it at 27 perfectly. You know, it is what it is. But it's why I go back to like why I want to create the tool that is life designed by time design, because that's one of the great benefits of it. You know what I mean? Like if it's really about using time with complete intention, because the benefit is you feel better about who you are, what you're doing, and what you've done. You know, that so you never get caught in that where did it go sort of mentality. And then you get better and better at it. And then you're changing, the world is changing, and everyone around you is changing. So your use of time and what brings joy in that time is changing as well. So you have to be kind of constantly evaluating it and evolving it and changing it and adapting to you as you're changing, right? Like it's not this static thing. It's in fact a skill set that you develop that will be the greatest skill that you learn, because the benefits of it are really experiencing life to a much fuller capacity for yourself. You know,
I need that beta software.
Got to get it to you.
We can be the test dummies.
Got to get it to you. And again, I want to give it to you guys, man. And I want it to be. It has to be where it gives you value and works for you immediately. Oh, we got to go back to the drawing board. And which is what I think is going to be my big problem to solve in the first couple years as I build and launch it, because of like the complexity of like, can I do it? And I grew into it, and now I reap the benefits of it because it's now intuitive in a way of being for me. But it's a lot to ask from somebody to begin to see the world like that and begin to design time like that and then track it all the time and tag. It's a lot to ask. So
you've got to want to do it.
Yeah.
You've definitely got to want to do it. That's a big ask for anybody, especially young.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't think it's for – yeah, it's not. And really, you know, when I think about the target audience, like it's not like, you know, I think, you know – I think of the Oura Ring users, right? There's 800,000 paying Oura Ring users, and what we call the quantified selfers. There's probably 2 million people that collect data on themselves to get insight. And I think that's sort of where it starts with that is sort of the core audience. And then how do you create a much more basic version for people that aren't in that mentality that still creates value is where the scale is. But I think even if it ends up just being a core product for that group of individuals, you know, at $20 a month and 250,000 subscribers, you have a $1 billion software business, right? So it's not like the shot has to be so big for that particular type of business. And then again, it's pure passion and gravy based off of the way that I operate already. You know, there's no stakes in it. I'm going to build it regardless. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. There are no stakes in it as it relates to what I'm trying to build as it relates to my life and way of being, you know.
Yeah, well, the less time you have, the more you think about time.
Yeah.
Like these young kids, you got all the time in the world.
Yeah.
Right, and then it catches up fast, man.
You don't realize when you're young that time is the most valuable resource.
Yeah, it's just another
day. You're young.
Yes.
That 27, you got all the time in the world. You don't even got to start worrying about time for another 10 years.
I was still working in a factory at 27, bro.
Yeah.
So, it's awesome.
Yeah, you're doing it.
I don't feel it. I hang out with you guys and I just don't feel it. I just want to be, you know, I just want to I want to spend every hour regardless.
And I think it's part of the paradigm. Like, you have to be ready depending on where it is too. It's just one of those things where, like, it's not for everyone. You know, the same way that, like, you know, I always, like, joke about how committed Tom Brady was to, like, you know, not eating sugar or bread, even in the off season. He doesn't even drink. This made no sense to me like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, where, like, today, like, living in it to where I don't eat sugar and don't eat and don't drink, don't any of it, like, and feel it, like, and see myself compounding. It took me years. Like, it wasn't that long ago. I didn't even believe that that was even worthy, you know, and now I fully understand it. And I just think that there's certain levels that they're very hard to reach, that you've got to be committed to for a long time. And then they have to present themselves to you as creating value for you. I think when you're young, it's hard to be healthy and do all these things and feel the benefit of it, because you can still get away with having energy and eating terrible and making bad decisions without the same level of ramification. You know?
Yeah. And do you still hunt out adrenaline at all for?
I do not. Like,
so if you, like, you know, whether you're out in a Ferrari or whatever, just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah, I don't, like, there's no, it's funny because it's like, for how much stuff that I have done, you know, because the final thing that I ever did, final stunt, outside of my proposal, I would say my proposal was my last stunt, but my last, like, real stunt was, like, the final scene of Fantasy Factory. I jumped the monster truck in front of 40,000 people at Anaheim Stadium through an exploding RV.
Yeah.
That was the final scene that we ever shot of Fantasy Factory, and I stood on top of that truck in the middle of that arena. And then that night, I asked my wife's father for her permission to marry her. And my wife's father might as well be like 25. And, like, even when I went to, you know, and he came out there that night and watched us go through the whole, you know, the whole experience. And then when I was like, you know, Brian, I really want to get your permission to marry your daughter. And he was like, oh, bro, for sure, bro.
100%.
Oh, and then he was like, oh, no. Okay, you're going to, you got to take care of her. And you tried to, like, lock into, like, dad mode, you know, instead. He was like, oh, bro, like, oh, absolutely, bro. Like, but, oh, let's lock in.
She's your responsibility now.
Yeah, man, but he tried to, like lock in, but he's an amazing guy. Like, me and him created an entire dance routine to surprise her for our wedding. Full choreographed, like, professional choreographed dance routine. Ooh. Me and him, because he's an extraordinary dancer. And, you know, that was the last time that I did anything. And then I proposed for my wife at Disneyland. I rented the cast of Aladdin and got 300 extras, and then told her I had to go to the restroom, and then came in on the elephant that rides through the crowd.
Oh my God, Prince Ali.
What?
Yeah, I came in on Prince Ali's elephant, and then I ended up on stage, really? You know, and
she knew it was coming at that point?
And your heart is just like...
She was like, you know, for her, it's like, you know, he's capable of anything. Like, look at, like, his life, you know, like, this might just be him, like, messing around. Like, he knows people at Disney, maybe. But that was sort of the last thing. And then, you know, even though my son, like, not that long ago, we were, you know, I was like, we're Daredex, we don't quit. You know, he's like, you quit skateboarding. And I'm like, I didn't quit skateboarding. I retired, you know, like, as it relates to he wishes, like, I, now that he's getting older, like, I wish he did stuff. But no, I like to think I'm, no part of me even, like, thinks about, like, even, like, the adventure side of, like, oh, I want to, you know, continue to do stunts or do anything that even is on that edge. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I just, it's fully left it on the court.
Look at a guy like Travis Pastrana. He's still out here.
That's what I'm saying.
Legendary. Like,
he's still out here scaring me.
That's what I'm saying. But all, there's so many people that still do and will forever, because that's just their makeup, you know, especially him. You know, he'll never not, like, be taking it to that level. But for me, I just never, my passion is feeling amazing in life and business and my family, like, these things that don't necessarily connect with putting yourself in the line of fire like it used to.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said about that.
Yeah.
You know, I can definitely commend that. You know, it's just, it's interesting seeing so many perspectives, and, you know, the way that I came to know you.
Yeah.
And then meeting you now is, it's honestly, it's amazing. It's incredible.
Just love it first.
Just listening to the things you say, it's mind blowing. So,
yeah. Well, look, I what I wish for you is the same way of like the inspiration that led to creating the trash in your own sort of freedom factory. You know,
and
the same sort of way that I loved and wanted to create this exciting, fun thing, that it really, at the end of the day, as you get older and evolve, you're really just trying to find harmony in life, you know, because you really want to get to a place, you want to spend all that energy in your youth and time of creating the skill sets and the strategies that leads you towards, you know, having a fulfilling, continuous state of joy when you're older, rather than like, you know, grinding it now, having to get a job in your late 30s to like pay for your mortgage and get into that level, you know what I mean? Because you blew all your money in the heyday of the factory, you know, because make no mistake, I did. You know what I mean? Like if you know, because I didn't fully understand money, I had made millions and lost billions and was just at zero when that 360 deal happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's only when I began to like, what do I want money for? And then how am I going to make money? And then re-engineered my strategy on how to build to sell businesses, and then created a investment strategy of investing in cash flowing real estate to balance my high risk venture studio, and then beginning to build and sell these companies and creating these big liquidity events, and then putting it into my investment strategy that grew into a place where now, like, there's no stakes in my life, right? Like, my lifestyle will never change because I grew in and built a portfolio strategy that was about, you know, something that I understood that would bring me peace. And I just think, you know, for both you guys, like, you know, even if it is a really basic strategy, I'm just gonna, you know, get $100 million in the bank and buy bonds, you know, like, even if it's something really simple, like understanding why you want money, how much you spend, and then how much you want to save to get to a place of harmony and peace, so that now when you get older, you're not feeling the pressure of maintaining your way of living. And a business makes that tremendously high pressure, right? Like when you got the cost structure connected to, you know, something like a track or multiple tracks, you know what I mean? You gotta be careful about not pinning yourself.
I wouldn't buy any tracks.
I've never heard $100 million and simple in the same sentence, bro. Just get $100 million in the bank, even if it is something simple.
That's
beautiful,
a good mentality,
man.
Though.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Rob.
Yes,
seriously.
I'm
lifted right now. Like, I feel great.
I feel motivated.
Yeah.
Get out there and live life to the fullest.
There's a Red Bull over there for me. I'm not drinking it.
I know.
I'm out.
You had to get the sugar kind, didn't you?
Yeah, no, I'm out now.
There you go.
Can't do it.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, thanks so much, Rob.
Appreciate you.
Really just great to hear from you. And this time, I feel it really elevated us. Good example.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Britt, you good?
Yeah.
You talked too much today.
I know.
Wait, how many horses, though? Final number? Do you have any right now?
Now I have zero. Okay, I have zero. Ended up selling all of them.
Well, that's...
After that, riding that thing.
Yeah, no, it's
wow.
You know, really, it was like we had a horse race in the Breeders' Cup. We bought it for $200,000 and sold it for $2 million. And then that was like the final horse that we ever had.
You're one of the few who's made money on the horses.
That's it. I broke even on the 13 by just having that one big one.
Oh, you know, okay. Yeah.
So if you, you know, we've been on the show so many times, like clips, but if you ever need somebody, 2,000 episodes.
Yeah, we'll have you on.
We got to get on there.
Yeah,
man.
We'll have
it
you on.
It would be an honor.
Yeah, we'll have you on. We, you know, especially right now we haven't had any guests. We're not going to have any guests for the first half of the year, but when we do, we'll have you on for sure.
Fantastic. I would love that.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. You're beautiful. You're one of a kind. Smile more. All right, man.
God bless.
Sweet.
Thank you, bro. That was amazing. Oh, thank you, guys. We can just snag a few photos.
So did you drive here, Rob, or are you?
Okay, good. We do good? Good on time?
Did you drive, or did someone, like...
Oh, yeah. How long was that?